This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
I want to welcome everyone, especially all the people who've never been here to a UCLA Mindful event. We're so excited to partner with Susan O'Connell for this event on conscious aging. I'm Diana Winston, and I'm the director of UCLA Mindful. We've had mindfulness here at UCLA for 20 years, and I've been running the program, and I'm teaching mindfulness and bringing mindfulness to throughout the campus and really globally, worldwide. I want to introduce Susan, who's our special guest. And so I'm going to read this. Susan O'Connell is a senior Zen teacher trained at the San Francisco Zen Center. During her 30 years in residence there, she served as director of development, vice president, and president of San Francisco Zen Center, among other senior positions. She began Zen practice in 1987 and received priest ordination in 1999 and Dharma transmission in 2016. So I left this part in because this might interest the LA people. Prior to her Zen training, Susan worked as a professional actress from 1967 to 1990, started two film production companies. So she's a founding officer of No Abode Hermitage on the board of Green's Restaurant, and is the visionary behind the creation of Enso Verde and Enso Village, where she currently resides. And we're going to learn all about that as part of our time together. So I'm delighted to welcome Susan. We're going to be in dialogue, talking about conscious aging. And so we're going to start. I just have a number of questions. So basically, I'll interview Susan for a bit, and then we'll open it up to the room and see what kind of questions you might have. And then we'll close with a practice where we can really connect with what it means to be aging, which, as Susan mentioned, everybody's aging. Okay. So my first question is, would you start by defining conscious aging, as opposed to, we'll just start with that. What is conscious aging?
So I appreciate that Diana asked me that question, last week. And so it made me actually put it into words, something I think about a lot. And so I'm going to read you what I wrote, because I like it quite a bit, actually. So what I define as conscious aging is the intentional practice of growing older with awareness and purpose and self-compassion. It involves accepting the realities of aging while actively nurturing physical health, emotional resilience, mental clarity, and spiritual well-being. Rather than resisting change, conscious aging invites people to reflect on their values and adapt to the new stages of life and deepen relationships and find meaning in both limitations and possibilities. It invites us to see aging not as a loss, but as a deepening. And the process emphasizes mindfulness, lifelong learning, gratitude, and a willingness to evolve, and helping individuals approach aging not as decline alone, but as an opportunity for wisdom, connection, and personal growth. So that's my current definition.
Well, it's a beautiful definition, and it's complex and meaty, and there's so many parts to it. I mean, we can go into different aspects of it, but I would love you to kind of contrast it with what is the opposite of that? What would it be like to not age with consciousness?
Right. Well, I think unconscious aging is sort of the default position for most humans, and it involves quite a bit of denial, and a kind of a belief that we can control outcomes. So there's a delusional aspect, and I think it's about non-investigation of our fears and concerns around aging. So we're sort of pushed back from this aversion we have, and we just don't go there. And that keeps us nice and unconscious.
Before I continue on, the people have been asking for the definition. I have it from you. Can I put it into the chat? Is that
Sure,
okay?
sure.
Yeah, okay, great. So, and then I'm going to just attribute it to you just in case people
Okay.
want it. It's a really great definition. All right, so it's in there for everybody. So it seems like the majority of people that I'm aware of do the unconscious aging, not the conscious aging.
Yeah.
So it's really when we're consciously aging, do you need to have a spiritual practice to consciously age, or can you intuitively do it in a conscious way?
Well, I don't know if you call it a spiritual practice. I think that maybe limits it a little bit because what you need to have is a sense of reality. You know, and so it's that denial part which gets in the way. So, you know, if something changes a little bit, rather than just skip over it, to just turn towards it ever so slightly. And that's an awareness practice. And I do think it takes some compassion to turn towards it. So compassion is also a spiritual practice, but it's also a human quality.
And yet we live in this culture where it's the opposite of what you're describing, right? It's and aging is considered like there's something wrong that we're aging, and people here in Los Angeles, everybody's trying to look like you're, 40 when you're not. How it feels very much against the grain of society.
It is against the grain, but I think if we aren't proactive about it, if we wait long enough, it'll be so painful to deny it that then maybe we wake up then to the fact that there've been a lot of change and things are different. So we can be led there with intention or we can be led there by default. And a lot of people wait until it's very, very difficult. And that's so much harder. It's so much harder. Instead of taking small bites and watching the process, which is, you know, it can be sudden, but it's mostly gradual and hardly noticeable until you kind of turn and look in the mirror. But there was a point when we were doing marketing campaign early on, and we wanted to show a picture of someone meditating. And I looked at it and I thought, could we do this, you know, in the LA market? And I wanted to have underneath it something that says, meditation better than Botox. Because it has many of the same benefits, right? And it's free. So yeah.
So someone is asking in the chat, and I'm willing to kind of, if people have questions as we go along, or we can open up in general, but as you have questions, because this is somewhat related, but how do you apply conscious aging when you have pain and your body is really falling apart? And this person says that's not, I'm not talking about normal aches and pains. How can we be conscious here?
Well, I would say that's almost a separate conversation because there are very specific practices and support systems for dealing with chronic or extreme pain. You know, over many years in meditation retreats, I've studied pain. My body has been in various levels of pain, and I noticed over time that if you resist it, if you shrink from it, it makes the pain worse. So that's a teaching that I've done with my own body of how to work with pain by just opening ever so slightly. And that does that and not wanting to be out of pain are the two tools I've found to help with pain. But chronic and extreme pain is really difficult, and you need a support system and very specific methodologies for working with that.
Yeah, thank you for that. So the in the definition that you have given us, it's an intentional practice of growing older with awareness, purpose, and self-compassion. I'm just curious, maybe this is a question for me, but when does it start? When do you start? I mean, I'm assuming that having a meditation practice at whatever age is a preparation in some way for this last or later stages of life, right?
Meditation is like going to the gym for all of for this entire purpose and many other purposes. We do the meditation practice, which helps us tolerate change in an environment where the change is not so extreme. So just small sips of working with change and noticing how we're not in control and how it does move from unpleasant to pleasant and back again, and getting more used to reality. And so, we're all aging, but we're all trying to resist change, which is kind of the Buddha's definition of suffering, right? Is trying to pretend that things don't change because they do. And so anytime you want to start, be a good idea.
Starts from the moment you're born, maybe.
Too much, yeah. That's a different kind of change in the early days, right? Which is equally, I'm sure, teething. I understand if adults had to go through it, we would have a really hard time. So.
There's still more. All right, so I'm getting questions coming in. Let's do this. Let me ask my couple of questions, and then feel free to put questions in the chat as you're thinking of them, and then I'll get to them in a little while, and we'll have that dialogue. And it's fine if you direct message me. That's okay if people want to be anonymous. So I saw something that you had spoken to me or written about, that a lot of us age like our parents. And what does that mean?
Well, that's our paradigm. That's what we know, having watched that generation in front of us age. And I don't think our parents were supported anywhere near in the way we are with this kind of level of curiosity about reality. I think there was a lot of assumptions of, as people get to a certain age, they are less viable. People are less viable. And the baby boom generation, which has, made huge mistakes, has also the advantage of having from the beginning been curious about reality. And so we have a chance to drop some of the assumptions that our parents had, who probably got them from their parents. And so and maybe there's also something about the generation, maybe the World War II generation, was very much about individualism. And I think our generation is more about community. And that's a big difference, is when you feel like you have to do it alone, or you have to do it just with your partner, in an isolated house, and the loneliness of that, as opposed to putting the work in to build community for ourselves.
So let's talk about that, because this is something that you have devoted this period of your life to, which is creating community for people to age in. And so what would you say are the benefits of aging in community? And then someone was asking, well, let's start there, and then I'll go on to the related question.
Well, having had the great opportunity to live in community for 30 years at the Zen Center, which is a place where you work and you live and you practice and you don't go home. It's all in one place. And the person you're working with today, who's your boss, tomorrow you'll be their boss. So it's a very integrated experience. And so I felt like that created, it created so many possibilities for friendship, for deep, meaningful friendship, with shared values of some kind in that kind of community setting, and for feedback, which is an important part of friendship, but also training. You know, what kind of a person do I want to be? And so community gives you really good feedback pretty quickly. And then maybe the in addition, in a community, you're exposed more intimately to new ideas. Because it's all right there. It's quite convenient. Instead of seeking it out, having to make the effort of going somewhere, right around you are so many possibilities. And then maybe the last part of helping with aging is community provides actual help, physical help. Someone's there, someone can be there, and you can help them, and they can help you. And that exchange is, it's heartwarming, it's intimate, it cuts through the loneliness, and it helps in the kind of like I can't bend all the way to the ground anymore. And I have a dog, which means that when I take her out and she poops, I can't pick up the poop, which is a no-no in community, right? And so I have a friend who sometimes we go together and we walk our dogs together. And so she can pick up my dog's poop. Now, that's a very, very small thing, seemingly, but it allows me to have a dog. It allows me the comfort of this sweet being in my life. So that's just a small example of the actual help.
It's a very evocative example.
Sorry.
But no, it's great. I mean, it's real, right? This is, it's true. You know, mindfulness and meditation, people often think as a kind of solitary practice, and but it's really, it's a community practice as well, and it's a relational practice. And one of the best, whether it's relationship like partnership, whether it's relationship in family, or whatever stage of life that you are in, it becomes a practice, a vehicle for helping everybody wake up, right? And that's the beauty of community, my experience with it in many forms that I've been, but I haven't gotten to this kind of community that you're in at this point, but I can imagine that you're all learning from each other, and that there's probably friction at times that you have to
Oh,
work
yeah.
through, and that there's insight and beauty that comes. And so I mean, feel free to respond to that, but I think maybe it would be good for you to share a little bit about Enso Village and what this community you're part of and the vision that you have.
Yeah. So I am living in this community that I imagined about 20 years ago as a kind of an answer to the issue we had at the Zen Center, which is we had promised retirement to our senior teachers who had lived in community anywhere between 20 and 50 years. But what we didn't have is actually a way to fulfill that promise. There was no None of our centers could hold seniors. They weren't appropriate, and et cetera. So the idea was to ensconce 20 of our teachers in a wider community and then bring our practices and, you know, the kind of the meditation and also community life and healthy eating practices and then a training on mindful community training. Bring it to the wider community, and that would be an exchange. And then we would all be able to the one phrase I really appreciate is, well, two of them that describe, I think, the whole vision is We're all in this together, which includes all the residents, but also all the staff and everybody else, and not turning away. So it takes a pretty good structure and a lot of safety and support to not turn away from difficulty, from change, which is not all difficult. Some of it's wonderful, right? So those were the kind of baselines of what the community wanted to be like. And we made it. It took a long time to find the right partners in the right space. And we opened about 2.5 years ago, and we're basically sold out. And then we saw this beautiful piece of land in Southern California and said, I think there might be more people who would benefit from this kind of a community to age in, a conscious oriented community with really good food and strong sustainability principles. And so we started the process for the second one in Southern California. So does that explain it enough?
Yeah, I think that gives people a good overview. Now, I've warned Susan that I need a 1 minute break because something is in my kitchen I have to fix. I will be right back. And feel free, Susan, if you want to share more about Enso Village while you're doing that. And I'll be right back, literally, 1 minute.
Yeah, she had to has to go help feed her daughter later. So, yeah, that's an example of community life, right? We help each other. I'm not sure what else to say about Enso Village except that there's a strong connection between what we eat in the kitchen and a leaning towards vegetarian food without forbidding other foods. It's sort of whatever your body needs and wants to eat, but we're going to have really good vegetables, and having a kitchen garden where we actually grow a lot of the vegetables, so people can be part of the entire process of awareness of where the food comes from. And how we feed ourselves, how we put it into our bodies. We haven't gotten to the place yet where groups of residents can like chop carrots. That would be so zen. And we're still trying to figure out the the rules about what people can and can't do with the food that we put in our bodies here in a community with lots of regulations around it, but that's on my agenda to see how we might be able to do that.
So we're starting to get some questions about the Enso Village, sorry, Enso Verde, the Southern California one. I'm going to hold that off until the end because there are some very specific questions. But the one we maybe you could answer is it is out in Simi Valley, and they just want to know how you're impacted by the fires. That's
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. Yes, the fire is sort of to the southwest of our land, but it is impinging a little bit on the land that is owned by the American Jewish University, who are our neighbors, our direct neighbors. So it's burning the grasses, which, on some level actually need that needs to happen from time to time. So it's happening now. It's part of a natural refurbishment of the soil, et cetera. And it's the worry is in the houses that are to the west, the west and southern edge of the fire. And that, I believe, is where most of the effort is going by the fire people. But our land is land, and there are no buildings on it, no people on it. And so we just hope that all the people and all the houses are cared for, and that our neighbors, the American Jewish University, because they do have buildings, that they are not, too much affected. So I think it's last I looked, it was 15% containment. So, as we say to people who want to know about fires, it's like, well, guess what? There will be fires. There will be fires almost anywhere you are in California. There will be something, fires or earthquakes or floods or, and the point is, how do we handle that in community? And what are there advantages of doing it together, which there are. So each person isn't on their own for working with a disaster. We have systems and we have materials that don't burn as well. And, we're kind of in a, if it's going to happen, we're in a pretty good situation for being with that experience and getting to the other side of it safely.
So we'll go back to the community, but I want to stay a little with the conscious aging theme. And one of the questions that I was interested in is how your own meditation practice has affected your aging process and what wisdom you might share with that.
Right. So I was glad you asked me that because it helped me reflect on it. And so a little bit of a story. I was very, very resistant in my early days of meeting various meditation practices. I was resistant to Vipassana, to actual mindfulness of, for instance, the breath. I didn't want to do it. I don't like it. I don't like it. So one day, Norman Fisher came to the Zen Center to do a long retreat, and he said it was going to be about the Satipatthana Sutra, mindfulness of the breath. And I called my teacher, Reb Anderson, and I said, "Do I have to do it? Can I just sit there and do my other practice?" And he says, "No, you don't have to do it." That, of course, gave me permission to do it. So I explored it during the retreat, and what I noticed is my hesitation to studying the breath was at the bottom of the exhale, it felt like dying to me. There was the experience of dying, which I, when I was very young, I had surgeries and I was given ether back in those days. And so you inhale and then you exhale, and as you exhale, you're gone. And that experience, I think, really kept me from being intimate with my breath. And then it put me in touch with my fear of dying, my fear of letting go of control, my fear of not knowing. So as I studied it and studied it, I started to get really interested in the space at the end of the exhale before the inhale. It's a very interesting transition and a kind of a letting go and a calmness, and there, all kinds of stuff is possible to be aware of in that space. And then out of that, the freedom of not knowing. We don't know. It all gets made up in every moment. And so that is a way of working with the not knowing about the changes that are happening or going to happen in my body. We don't know. I can prepare for that. I can better relate to that and not resist it as much in that remembrance of the freedom of not knowing. So, yeah, that's what I've been studying.
And it sounds like my experience so far with aging and with many people who are aging in my life, that it's a lot of not knowing, right?
Right.
And we need that skill set to be able to handle the not knowing,
That's
right?
right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Letting go of expectations, both positive and negative. It's not all negative either. The fear base of thinking it's going to get worse. Well, some things might get worse, but actually other things get better. You don't care as much about what people think of you, yeah.
And can you say more about sort of the Zen practice that you have and how that impacts your aging? And maybe that's already what you've answered, but.
Well, I would. So my Zen practices, I mean, there are meditation styles which are slightly different between Zen and other practices, but I would say my Zen practice is actually about integrating my meditation practice into everything I do. That's my Zen practice. There's no separation, and there are ways to to kind of shore that up. Sometimes we talk about, when you pick up something, pick it up with two hands. So there's an awareness practice that gets put into action. And then there are the compassion teachings, which are completely necessary to live in community, unless you want to be miserable all the time. Self-compassion first, really making sure that, we're dealing with how difficult it is sometimes, and understandably, we're resisting, and understandably, I just made a mistake and I wasn't kind to someone, and all of that. And then building on that to be compassionate to others, because we are all in this together. And the more aware I am of my changes and difficulties, the more I can open to other people's. And that's all part of my Zen practice.
And it sounds like patience is very key to this.
Patience, it's patience is the baseline, because it's what allows us to meet things as they are, without immediately trying to change them or control them. Like if things are good, we want to make sure they continue to be good, right? And so stopping, opening, warm presence is kind of what patience is. Toleration is one way to talk about it. Sometimes all you can do is tolerate, and not necessarily all the way to complete patience. But we need to be able to stay present and be aware of our restlessness and our wish to control.
And so when we do a meditation practice, patience is one of the virtues or one of the qualities that's developed. And then this patience becomes something that we bring out into every aspect of our life. And it's so needed within community. And it's so needed as you face aging. And I mean, that's what I'm hearing. But there seems to be a lot of obstacles to patience, right?
Yeah, I made a list of them because we were talking about this before this meeting, and one of the big ones is we want to recoil from discomfort. So being in the territory of discomfort, it's like, oh, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. But if we don't move, and this is maybe a little bit more of the Zen practice too, because we really practice not moving, and that means physically and actually mentally. We don't lean with it into the idea or into the future or into the past. I mean, it's not that we don't, it's that our practice is to work with the fact that we do. But that recoiling from physical discomfort is keeps us from being able to be patient and present. And then we didn't, well, I talked about it a bit before about the Botox, but the vanity aspect, the self-identification of we are this person and we don't want to look different or be different, and the fact that I can no longer touch the ground, I could take that, like that's a bad default, position to be in, and I don't want to be that person, and I'm, I can do it. And it's like, no, I can't. No, I can't. But there's some other things I get to do. Like I get to go out with a friend and she picks up the poop. So vanity and recoiling from difficulty, and just denial. These are all obstacles to patience.
So someone did ask the question, sort of, that you're touching on is how do we cope with our physical appearance changing or becoming less, and I put in quotes, less attractive with the current beauty standards? Like, how do we apply our practice right in that moment, would you say?
Well, I've worked with So sometimes I go close into the mirror and I kind of push up all the wrinkles, you know, and I go, oh, isn't that adorable? You know, I just changing my attitude about, I mean, they're kind of cool, you know, if you really, these lines are, they're like a sculpt, they're like, life has raked my face, right? And so, what do I need to have it be youthful anymore? What do I need that for? I have no use. I'm not looking for a partner right now. I'm very relaxed about that, you know? So, I don't need to look a particular way to accomplish anything that's important to me anymore. So none of this is easy, but radical moves like that, like instead of saying, oh, I don't like the wrinkles, that, oh, I love those wrinkles. I kind of love them. They're kind of cute, you know, and being playful with this change is one thing I use. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I find that kind of like, well, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Right? Here it is.
For me, I find self-compassion here is a really, really important practice of when I notice the part of me that goes, oh, that's not what I, you know, so you see a picture of yourself from 10, 20 years ago, and
Yes,
you go,
yes.
what happened? And then just taking a pause and a breath and putting my hand on my chest and just really appreciating this body as it is. And that's really a profound practice of within mindfulness within our lives is how do we be with this as it is?
Yes, it is.
And so anyway, it takes a lot of compassion, and I'm you know, in a different stage of life than you all, but I'm definitely definitely comes up anyway.
Well, that and that, I was just thinking that too, because I'm 80, you know, and there's a difference between every few years. It gets easier. I don't know why, but maybe because it's so clear. What's clear at this age to me is there actually is a limit to the time I have left. I mean, we think that, but I can actually, I have more of a visceral experience of that and acceptance of that. And so, how do I want to spend this time? What are my priorities, right? And it gets, this is one of the benefits, is it does get easier. It can get easier as we get older. And there's a difference.
I think there's something I saw when my dad got older, like quite older. He just stopped caring. He would wear like those silly hats with the funniest things. He'd wear socks with sandals, and it just like it didn't matter anymore. And I found that so liberating. I'm hoping that one day I'll head there.
I often just wear kind of jump coverall kind of things because I doesn't I got a little dressed up today, but you know it is very comforting to just be relaxed and
So it looks like we're getting a couple of different kinds of questions in the chat. Some of them are specific questions about Enzo Verde, and some are kind of more general questions, which maybe we'll touch on those a little bit, and then.
Why don't we do the more general ones? I mean, the I appreciate that people want to know about Enzo Verde, and there's links, and also it's like the people are in the office really answering, you know, willing to answer questions, so we can combine them. But I want to make sure we're talking also about the practice aspect.
Great. So just to let everybody know, as we said, we'll put some links about Enzo Verde. There's a lot of information on the web, and we really want to support the development of this community, because it's a beautiful, beautiful vision, and for all the reasons that Susan is talking about, so that we can wake up together as we age.
And this group is the right kind of like-minded, like we could say, like-hearted group of people who have some interest in and understand the benefits of having a mindfulness practice because it's what conscious aging is based on. So.
So I'll just read a couple of the comments, some are comments, and then some are questions. There's a couple I want you to get to, but someone just wrote, "I've never gotten so many compliments on my hair as I have since it's gone gray. Excuse me, silver. I feel a new freedom for not worrying so much about my appearance. Acceptance and a little makeup go far as we age." So yes, acceptance. "As someone in their mid-30s raising a daughter, I like to ask, who benefits from this beauty standard? The answer is never humanity or anything I hold dear in my values." Yeah, that's a really, really important to see it within the larger cultural picture. And then there's a lot of comments about aging and physicality. "I try to be grateful that I received those extra years to gain those wrinkles. Some people don't get that." Yeah. And then someone wrote, "I have found that those friends that are healthy are way more concerned about looks." That's interesting. "When illness and other issues are very present, it seems like it takes looks take a back seat."
You know, what I've found about people who have been fortunate to be physically healthy most of their lives. I mean, I know people have never been in a hospital and never broken a bone and all of that. When something does happen, I see that their experience is so much more difficult than it was for me, who had some early surgeries when I was a kid. I don't assume I'm not going to have problems. People who don't have haven't had problems haven't had to work with it at all. And often there's a rage, like I'm being betrayed by my body. And that assumption that it's always going to be the way it is. So I think it is really hard for people who have been very, very healthy when something happens. And I appreciate that that's a big shift. That's a big shift.
Yeah, thank you for that. By the way, someone mentioned having a sense of humor is key to all of this. and someone also appreciated you for saying like-hearted, as our minds are so different. And so that's a nice way of framing it. A question that I would love to hear you answer that's around here somewhere is basically, oh, how can Gen X and millennial generations support our parents in conscious aging?
Yeah, well, you can't lead a horse to water, but I mean, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. If your parents aren't curious about an alternative from their parents, right? It's harder. But, you know, I found that the younger generations who have been introduced to mindfulness and meditation, often through their workplace, right? And sometimes in your schools and everything, they have had the benefit and they understand how it helps them. So showing your parents how it's helped you will open them up because they want you to be happy. And if you show them what makes you happy, then they might get curious and interested in finding out a little bit more about how to look at their aging differently. But that denial piece is, you know, I'd say it's predominant. It's a predominant modality for our culture is denying aging. And so it takes subtle suggestions and showing them what works for you and makes you happy.
I would just add that, I mean, it's very much what you're saying, Susan, but when we embody it, people get interested. You know, I want what you have. What is that? So we can be that way in our families, and then we don't have to advertise, but we can just be it. And the other thing that just a little practical thing for me, because my mother's in her 80s, is as a for us to this is just a practical aside. Lists of all the information that you need about the, like spending a lot of time creating a binder so that you have all the contacts and accounts and everything in order.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can really like get that off your mind so you don't have to like scramble if somebody gets ill, if a parent aging gets ill or something happens. So just a little side thing.
Well, and requesting that, when the children request that, sometimes again, the parents, oh, we'll talk about it later, or we don't want to talk about it. But you can actually say, I need this. Can you please do this for me? Is make these lists and understand your funeral and, and all of that. What that, what's your password? And, I have that all laid out for my son, who every time I travel, I send him this letter. And he always dreads getting it because, he's got to then think about, but I've been proactive. He didn't ask, but children can ask for that. And it's a huge gift.
And someone mentions having an advanced healthcare directive and trusts and wills and, the whole deal
The
because.
whole deal. One of the things that happens here at Enso Village is we have groups that talk about death and dying all the time. And other senior communities look at us and say, "What? You what? You talk about death?" And we've got the Five Wishes group. We've got a group called, Not Turning Away. We've got transition groups talking about grief, and it's like, yeah, let's turn towards this and not hide it, and then move on and, go party. I mean, it's not all like that, but when you don't read, oh, I know what I wanted to say earlier. When we don't resist reality, we have a lot more energy to live our life. So much of that resistance energy just weighs us down. And so if we can sit in the middle of it, that energy is freed up to explore, do something new, take care of ourselves, do nothing. I really know that's true.
I think that goes for any age about anything.
Any age. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
A number of questions are coming in. So it's wonderful that you all spend time facing reality and talking about these things. But in most of the culture, it's really hard to do. So people are asking questions like, are there groups for mindful aging or conscious aging? Are there places we can? I know there's something some of you may be familiar with, it's called the Death Cafe.
Yeah, death days, that's a good thing.
Some of you are familiar with that. You can look that up online, but they actually people meet and talk about death over like meals. But I'm not familiar with like conscious aging programs or classes or I don't know.
I think we're just starting all this, and it will grow out of it. I know that that the Zen Hospice with whom we've worked to create our training program called Mindful Community Training is trying to shift not just in terms of training volunteers to be in the hospice situation, to be with dying. We're trying to sh shift it to what's the training for being with aging, which is a slightly different thing. And so we're adjusting our curriculum. And I think the Zen, it's called Zen Caregiving now instead of the Zen Hospice Project. They're looking to also pivot towards that. It's quite helpful in senior communities because you can do it together. But I don't know yet of any other active existing groups that are
There
spiritual.
is the Year to Live program that I
That's
think,
right,
yeah, that.
that Frank Ostrzeszewski does. Yes. So there are some things like that. That's a great one.
Yeah, someone, I think Spirit Rock is doing it as well. Someone wrote that Eckhart in LA has a conscious aging program online. I think you're right. I feel like the field is ripe for so much to happen and grow. And I mean, it's amazing what you've done with creating this community that's based in these values of compassion and patience and care for each other and this process of waking up together in community as you age. And so I think just because we have about 5 minutes left, I'm wondering if I'm looking, there are a lot of questions I didn't get to, but maybe we can have Susan come back at another point and do more with us and talk
Happy
more about
to.
it. And then, we'll keep in mind at UCLA Mindful, might there be some way
Great.
of doing something around conscious aging down the road
Great.
so that
Great.
they're addressing this. But
Okay.
maybe do you want to say anything before we close about and so about the
Yeah.
vision?
So Verde, so we're in this, very dynamic process now of filling up with kind of reservations because there's nothing to see. So one needs to hold this vision of what the community is going to be like with some pictures and some examples. But the kind of pioneers are coming forward and saying, "I want to be at the forefront of this." And so they're signing up, they're choosing, a place to live at Enso Verde. And then we'll get to a point where we have enough of that momentum to be able to start construction. And so it's an important time in the project. And what we're trying to emphasize again is like-hearted people, because if we come in early, first of all, there's some important financial advantages to being an early person, but we can start building the community by people meeting people who have made that commitment. And there are already small groups of people doing that and meeting in living rooms and meeting online. And so you can create that community that you're going to move into, so it won't be a bunch of strangers. And I think that's the part of the process we're in, is building the community and getting that last piece of momentum that takes us to the beginning of construction, hopefully at the end of this coming year. So.
Great. Oh, that's great to hear. And I saw that Bradley put something in the chat about there's
Good.
going to be an information session about Enso Verde
Oh,
tomorrow.
right. Oh, right. There's a
Right.
Zoom session. Bradley, I can't remember the timing of it, but.
But it's right there. It's 4 p.m. tomorrow,
Okay, cool.
Pacific time. And it's anyway, there's a link in the chat at 5:25 p.m. If you look at it, you'll find it. So this is so I want to wrap up and just say I'm going to say a little bit about UCLA Mindful because there's a lot of new people, but let me do that. So we have a center here at UCLA, but it has classes open to the general public, and so many of the things that we offer are free, and then we have a number of other additional classes. So there's some things coming up. I have day-longs coming up and study groups and ways of going deeper into mindfulness and lots of free events that you can just come. We have morning meditation, afternoon meditation. So there's a link that says UCLA Mindful Offerings where you can look at our calendar of events and join our mailing list and so forth. Also, we have an app, and the app is also called UCLA Mindful. And this session will be put on the app. So the app is free, free forever, and it has hundreds of meditations on it, and little short ones and long ones, and talks and lectures. So if you go to talks and lectures, we'll have this one up within a couple of days, and then you can re-listen to this if you want to. So I'm thinking, first of all, I want to thank everybody so much for joining us, and in particular, Susan, thank you. Can we give her some love through Zoom
Thank you.
for her beautiful words on aging and helping us to see the importance of our practice and community as we age? And as we said at the beginning, everybody's aging. So we're really delighted. And just this vision of this retirement community and this place where we can, where practice will continue through all of life is so profound. So I just want to thank you for that. And I think maybe we'll just take one last. The app is called UCLA Mindful, named after it. We'll send something out to the people who registered because I know there's a lot of new people with some more information. And I just want to end with like a minute of meditation because I think if we just take a moment to breathe together and feel our own hearts and minds and feel the power of practicing in community, which is what we're doing right now. And appreciate each other for our commitment and our care. And let's imagine sending kindness out from here, from this room, out into the world. And in particular, why don't we send some kindness and compassion to the Simi Valley area where there is this fire raging and all of the people who there's a tremendous amount of fear and worry, anxiety. And so may that suffering be alleviated and may it be quickly resolved, and all of the animals and the plants and all of that that are affected, may there be a quick resolution and freedom from fear. May there be peace and ease and well-being for everyone. So we take a breath together and just wish you all well, and please stay connected, and either through us or through Susan, we'd love to have you back. We have a meet every Wednesday at this time. We have a meditation that you can drop in on, so feel free to join. All right, thanks so much. Thank you, Susan. So good to be with you again.
Thank you for including me and in introducing me to your wonderful community.
Absolutely. All right, take care, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.